Good morning and welcome to the Pirates Podcast to be named later here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. He's Chris Halleck. I'm Alex Stumpf. I'm in San Francisco. You're in La Trobe right now?
I am actually back in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Yesterday was the last practice in La Trobe before the first Steelers preseason game, which at this point, I'm finally ready to see something else other than practice because we talk about practice. I mean,
you want to talk about the game.
Practice. I want to talk about the game.
All right.
But not, anyway. Speaking of games, Alex, there are games going on the West Coast, or at least in the Pacific time zone that you are covering right now. And I'm going to put the call on you.
Oh, boy.
To describe what is going on in Arizona and what's going to happen in San Francisco let's not talk about that because it's not pleasant, right?
Yeah, you're right. It'll get a poor reception. Instead,
sorry. The pun jokes. I'm a sucker for puns. I really am. I'm a very punny guy.
There we go. Instead, we're going to talk a little prospects here for the first part of the show, because Baseball America, which I often cite, I think Baseball America's top 10, top 100 it's the premier as far as prospect coverage goes. I really like FanGraphs for getting to know like the nitty gritty, like organizational guys, the 40 grades right there. I think they have the best, you know, in depth in that regard. But the gold standard for me is always Baseball America. And I got to be honest, I'm puzzled with their top 10 list for the Pirates prospects.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just released here. And I'm going to read off the 10. We're going to talk about some other guys who I think are notable here that are, you know, worth examining further. But the top 10, it's what everyone says. Everyone's like, oh, we need more, you know, guys who could be top 10 prospects or whatever. Reading them off. Tamar Johnson's number one. Quinn Priester, two. Leover Peguero, third. Henry Davis, fourth. Then Mike Burrows, five. Andy Rodriguez, six. Nick Gonzalez, seven. Thomas Harrington, eight. Harrington was the supplemental first-round pick this year.
Yep.
Jared Jones, nine. And Carmen Majinski, 10. Salamedo and Chandler are 11 and 12. And I know we're splitting hairs here of them being not top 10s, but they're really odd omissions here. And it's going to sound like I'm going to be slighting some people here, but Thomas Harrington is, I get, a higher floor guy than Salamedo and Chandler, but he is, and I like a lot about Harrington. Yeah. I really like his mechanics. I like how he can tilt the ball. I like how he has really efficient movements towards the plate, that if he could grow into a couple more miles per hour, he could be a problem. He could be a real big league starter.
Oh yeah.
I see a great foundation with him. I don't see the ceiling, and I'm a sucker for high ceilings, but no, I would rather have Bubba or Salamedo. Both of them were also ranked higher in Baseball America's top 500 last year than Harrington was this year. Carmen Majinski, same boat. And Carmen Majinski actually hasn't done a whole lot in Altoona, actually. Right. I would think that would hurt his stock. Having both of them in the top 10 and not Salamedo and Chandler, and I know we're splitting hairs over a couple placements there, but there is prestige of being referred to as a Baseball America top 10 prospect, and they are not at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I think, and we even will get into this with the number one prospect, as we were talking about before we started recording. But when you put a prospect in the top 10 before they've even logged a professional inning,
yes,
that is already, not saying that they're not worthy of it, not saying that they haven't done that, their grades, you know, coming out of high school or college, wherever they're coming from, you know, aren't worthy of putting them, because the ceilings are there, or the high floor is there, whatever the reason is. You know, obviously the Tamar Johnson situation, you know, you look, I mean, he's the highest graded hitter what since Joe Mauer. I mean, it's you know, you have different guys, you know, different characteristics and situations of why guys will go in. But yes, when it comes to like a supplemental round pick making it to a number eight spot in one of the top five organizations or, you know, farm systems in baseball.
I think that's fair to say.
I mean, at least a top 10, but I mean, a real argument for top five farm systems in baseball. That's a pretty, if it were going in the top 10 of like bottom five, okay, that's a little bit more understandable. But yeah, when you have guys who are, like you said, like Solometto and Chandler, you know, being able to having already established themselves in the professional ranks and are trending in the right direction, and then omitting them, that is a bit puzzling. And yeah. I really want to get your thoughts on whether or not Tamar Johnson should be the top prospect in this organization right now.
Well, I mean, not to reveal too much of the, you know, how the sausage is made here, but the weekly top 10 features, a lot of that is, you know, the guy who writes it, you know, they get a lot right. of the, they get the lion's share of the say. So mm-hmm. I've made my point there that I know Henry Davis hasn't played a ton of games in professional baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even, you know, end of this year, I could be like, all right, Tamar Johnson is number one. But for right now, I still have Davis at number one. I think they were way too hard on him. You know, they erroneously say he has had multiple wrist injuries. It's just been the same one wrist injury. Mm-hmm. And even then, like, it's not, he was hitting the wrist with a pitch. Like, this was right. a freak injury. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it really sucks for him, because here's someone who could have been, if he was healthy and hitting the way that we all know that Henry Davis could hit, we might be talking about, do you send him to Indianapolis right now?
Yeah.
Is he someone who forces his way onto the major league roster next year, opening day? Yep. You just don't see that anymore. Like, yeah, he'll probably finish in Altoona, and that's really good. He'll probably, not probably, but I could see him. I shouldn't say probably if I don't have any source on it, but I could see him going to the Arizona Fall League, you know, at the end of the year to get, you know, more professional bats. I could see him maybe even starting in Indianapolis, you know, at the start of next year, or very quickly mm-hmm. getting a promotion up like he did this year from Greensboro to Altoona.
Yeah.
I would still see him in Pittsburgh in 2023, but it definitely pushes the timetable for him, for the Pirates catcher of the future, to get back. That stinks. Tamar Johnson is healthy, but you got to play a couple games. And I know he literally yeah. has just started playing games, but no, let's see what he does there. Let's see what Thomas Harrington can do before you declare him a top 10 pick. I mean, this is an organization that if it's not a top five farm system anymore, it's only because they've graduated Contreras and Cruz.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
that'd be the only reason why they wouldn't be right now. I don't know.
There's no question that Henry Davis coming out of the draft was more major league ready, just because, I mean, he's coming out of college.
Oh yeah. So, and he was an advanced college hitter on top of that.
Correct. So there's no question that Henry Davis is more major league ready coming out of the draft than Tamar Johnson is. That's just, that's an obvious statement. I'm you know, being Captain Obvious here, but how much of that do we weigh into prospect rankings? How close are they to the major league level and being able to make an impact at the major league level? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you might make a really good argument for Henry Davis, because if he is healthy, I think it should play very, very well. And that's why the Pirates took him, you know, number one overall last summer. So, but Tamar Johnson, I mean, the
Tamar hit tool Johnson. Is, could be the best hitter. I'll throw what Jack Wilson said. Like, the last time the Pirates drafted a hitter like this, you know, it worked out pretty well. He played center field and wore number 22. Like, that was a really, that was a really good, and frankly, he could be the best player to pass through this system since Andrew McCutchen. Not saying that he will, but he has that potential. Henry Davis, I just see, I know I knocked the floor, and like, I think he's a high ceiling, you know, impact player where he could be an all-star also, but I also see his floor just being so ridiculously high that I just don't see this any scenario outside of just continuous injuries where this guy is a bust. And I know people are going to say, well, he was hurt last year. That was an oblique injury. That was a freak thing. Being hit in the wrist with a pitch, that's a freak thing also. It's going to be more like if we see something really pop up recurring right there, which I'm not going to put the injury bug on someone who got hit in the wrist with a pitch. Like, that's not fair. It's, I think Henry Davis, I've said this before, I think he is the captain of the next Pittsburgh Pirates team.
Mm.
And I don't know if he'd be the best player, but he was definitely the guy that I went to minor league camps. He was the guy that people gravitated to whenever he did live BPs. People, one of the coolest moments I've seen, you know, covering this organization was one group of players was done a little early and Henry Davis was coming to bat and every single one of them could have gone to their lockers. They could have gotten out of the hot Florida sun. Not a damn one of them did. They all went to watch Henry Davis hit. Like, that is a commanding moment, this is the guy. This is still right now the number one prospect, and to have him drop as severely as he did, I think that's off. And it got his boost. I'm glad that Mike Burrows is finally considered top five, because I've made clear that, you know, I think that Priester, Peguero, Burrows, you know, tier players right there, mm-hmm. who could be, you know, big league starters. I think they're all within arm's length of one another. I just don't see Henry Davis also being in that group. I put it in there, like, there's tiers to this farm system, and the top two right now are the two first round draft picks from last year. And then you've got the Priester, Peguero, Burrows, and then to round it back up, you got Salamedo and Chandler in that. In my opinion, you got Andy Rodriguez, you got Nick Gonzalez. So I that's the way I kind of view it all.
Yeah. And I just to hit on, you know, the point again of this is, I mean, if we learned anything, and not to do another Moneyball reference, and no, there wasn't Moneyball in Little League whenever I was a kid, but
that's a throwback.
But yeah, just throwing it back to a couple episodes ago. But I mean, none of us have a crystal ball and know exactly what a prospect is going to do. And I still like whenever I've gotten questions about, like, how do you think the next crop of pitch, how does the future of starting pitching look? I'm like, I can't tell you it right now. It looks okay. It looks like Quinn Priester is going to be a guy. It looks like Mike Burrows is going to be a guy. I mean, it looks like, you know, they've got some arms who are going to be able to come up, but until they get on the mound at PNC Park and other big league parks and are pitching major league innings and having success, we won't know. And that's just, Termar Johnson might be the best hitter the Pirates have drafted, you know, in since Andrew McCutchen, or I mean, but until it actually plays out that way, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And whenever we start putting rankings together and putting guys, you know, unless it's just like, you know, like Termar Johnson, understandably is one of the top prospects in the organization coming in just because of the potential there. Not saying that Thomas Harrington is not worth it, but to put him in the top 10, I think that is being a little generous for sure. Yeah. Just because I don't think there's enough there already to be like, oh, he's already worthy of being considered higher than guys who have already been professionals for multiple years and, like I said earlier, are trending in the right direction. So I kind of agree with you on that one. Anybody else you wanted to hit on that wasn't in the top 10?
Yeah, I'm going to just roll through a couple names here. Malcolm Nunez, mm-hmm. one of the prospects that they got in the...
Hold on. I got a pun joke for you. He is number 16, so he is literally Malcolm in the middle of the top 30.
Yeah, life is unfair. Interesting placement for that seems fair.
This probably is in the middle of our podcast too, so
like
podcast length.
Oh man,
Eddie,
multimedia director. Eddie needs to add a lot of commercials, so it's not. Sorry, everyone. Some other names: Luis Ortiz jumping up to number 22. I've heard very good things out of him out of Altoona. Don't know if he's going to stick as a starter, but he's got stuff. It's just learning to control it. I could see him as a bullpen guy. Matt Gorski, not a ton of love, but good to see him, you know, crack number 25 whenever, you know, he again, injured right now, but he was just absolutely crushing the baseball.
Yeah.
Right there. 27-28, Connor Scott, Hudson Head, two of the main prospects that they got back in the Jacob Stallings and the Joe Musgrove trades. Neither one of them seems to be trending particularly well at the moment. Scott got off to a fast start, but really has not done much since. Mm-hmm. And then Andres Alvarez at number 30. This one is interesting to me because Kyron Madison, the manager in Altoona, absolutely loves him. And there was a stretch this year where they were putting him in positions, you know, like just wing it, make him a utility man, because they were trying to get this guy in the lineup as much as they could. This is someone that, if you want to talk about a really deep sleeper in the system, he could be one. I'm glad that, you know, he gets a little recognition here at number 30, because he is someone who is very well liked in Altoona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One guy who I was recently getting questions about, actually a couple of different guys, G1 Bay at number 23 and Travis Swaggerty at number 24. Yeah. It seems like, you know, it was shortly after I had started on here, and there was a lot of, I won't say a lot, but there was at least some attention for whenever Swaggerty came up and he made his major league debut and everything like that, and here he is number 24, and it just kind of seems like the excitement for him has kind of dwindled a little bit.
I mean, we've seen a lot of outfielders get caught up, and he's been consistently the guy left in AAA outside of that one cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how much to read into all of it. I know that last year there was no one who was – he was maybe the most impressive player at the Pirates alternate site last year. And then he got hurt, and, you know, that, you know, put a damper on the career, but – I don't know. He's in a position where he needs to play every day. And I feel like there could be opportunities in the major leagues for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Pirates are obviously keeping him down there for one reason or another. I don't know. I think it's telling whenever we've seen Bly a couple times, we've seen Calvin Mitchell a couple times. Kane Smith and Njigba's hurt, so we really don't know where he would be, you know, in this whole situation, but there was definitely outfield opportunity. And he's playing in AAA. I don't know exactly how firm what's going on there, because he was a high ceiling, you know, or not high ceiling, high floor, you know, first round draft pick in 2018. A lot of that with his defense and his speed. And
yeah, I mean,
we're waiting for the bat to really break out still.
Right, right. And see, that's the thing, is that somebody asked, you know, what's the ceiling for Swaggerty? And I said, well, honestly, even if he hits, I'm thinking like a fourth outfielder. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of like what it seems to me is like, I don't think that's the
ceiling, but it's looking like a very plausible outcome.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, because obviously if he like hits and really hits, I mean, that's three dynamic tools there of, you know, hitting, you know, running and playing defense. That's valuable on any team. But I think at this rate, if he ends up becoming a fourth outfielder, I think that's honestly a win for the Pirates right now. I don't know if that's a,
I don't view that as a win.
Well, maybe not as a win, maybe more as a, you kind of say it's like when you're playing.
How would you phrase like not an indictment? If Travis Swaggerty hits his floor and, you know, becomes a regular MLB contributor, be like, okay, well, that is what it is.
I would say like for the average amateur golfer, it's you had a great drive, then you absolutely shanked the crap out of your second shot, and you still ended up saving, you know, not saving par, but at least getting a bogey out of it or something like that. Yeah. Maybe that's the equivalent. I don't know, but. It just seems like the excitement around him has really kind of dwindled down a little bit. And it's a lot of rotation with all the young guys. It seems like one guy gets called up, another guy gets optioned. It's like this carousel of younger guys getting opportunities, and then one guy goes back down. And on this carousel of guys moving around, Swaggerty's standing off to the side, just not on it. He's just so.
That is a very depressing metaphor.
And with that metaphor in our minds of poor Travis Swaggerty, watching on as other people get to play on the amusement park rides. We're going to take a break. This is a very long first segment. We still got some show left to go, though. And maybe we should dial it in for a second. Welcome back to the Pirates Podcast, to be named later, here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I didn't give Chris a lot of time between whenever we actually started, so he's still chuckling over a really bad phone pun.
It's really not, though, because it is. You can't have a bad pun for me. Like, it's just, yeah. Oh, it's so good. So based off of that pun, what more is there to say about Rodolfo Castro and his phone, which has now become, that's going to be something that's played for, it almost doesn't matter what happens in his career. That's just going to be something that's just played for years years.
It's not quite the same level as like a Randall Simon, you know, sausage incident or something, but it's definitely going to be one of those, like, well, remember that time whenever Rodolfo Castro, you know, had a cell phone fall out of his pocket. God. And I feel bad even talking about it here. We're going to keep this one short, because I do feel bad for the guy, because it was very clearly an accident that he had no intent of using it in the game. And I felt even bad, you know, asking him like after the game, like, so why do you always have your oven mitt with you? Because that's kind of like the actual factor that went into all of this. He's like, oh, it feels good. I always have it on me. And, you know, I want to be ready. And I felt bad asking that question, but I felt like it was one of those follow-ups, like, okay, why are you the only player that has that? And yeah, I wrote the story. I really don't have anything else to say other than that was weird. As weird as everything in this, all the weird stuff I have seen in this organization, him pulling out a cell phone and handing it to Mike Rabello at third bases, it cracks the top five. It cracks the top five. It's not Will Craig. It's not, you know, a lot of things, but it's
well, we just
on the top five.
What was it? Just a few weeks ago, we were talking about the weirdest things that we've seen, you know, play out, you know, either in a game or just in a major league ballpark. And I mean, the fact that that what we talked about continues to be topped as this season goes on is just, I think that's a great way to sum up the 2022 Pirates. Honestly, it's just one just mind boggling moment after the other.
There's a Robot Chicken sketch I like where they are doing Empire Strikes Back. It's like, this deal keeps getting worse all the time. Like, I have altered the deal. Pray alter it further. It's like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in a Pirates game of all time. Pray it doesn't get any weirder. Yeah.
It's true.
And it just keeps building and building and building and building. And my favorite part is whenever stuff like this happens on the road. Because every single road reporter, whether they're AP filling in for MLB.com or you know, just whatever their local paper or outlet is out there, they always have the same question. And it's, have you seen anything like that before? And I give Shelton credit. He has a good, you know, I'll say canned response, because, you know, he's saying it for the road reporters, because us who travel, well, we know what's coming on. He's like, if you stay around the game long enough, you're going to see stuff that you've never seen before. And it's like, yeah, that is the most diplomatic way to say something like this. That is a good prepared statement. Throw it out there. Bam.
It is. And it's just, and like you said, I do kind of feel bad for Castro, but it is such a bad look for him, because
it's a terrible look.
Just because, like, his last game before his option, he doesn't run out of pop out, and he ends up getting doubled up because of it. And then his first game back after he's brought back up, this happens. And it's just like, man, it's such a bad look, and you hope that he's able to move past this kind of stuff and be able to, you know, and be able to become the player that he thinks he can be and the Pirates think he can be, because that would be the best thing to happen for all parties involved, is for Rodolfo Castro to move beyond phones falling out of his pants, sliding into third base. So I think that could pretty much be said the same, say the same thing for just about every other player in baseball. Don't have your phone in your pants.
No.
I understand. I mean, even in like places like T-Mobile Park, it's still not, a good idea.
All right, we're gonna drop the golf call here for a couple minutes. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Pirates Podcast, to be named later here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. Chris, last segment of the show, I'm going to throw you a question on the spot.
Oh, God. The answer is Yu Chang.
Who is the Pirates equivalent, any level of their organization, major leagues to down in the Dominican, who is their equivalent of George Pickens?
Oh my gosh.
And interpret Pickens as either the most talented player on earth, either the okay, you guys do realize he was like the sixth wide receiver taken this draft still. So maybe this is a little overhyped.
This is going to sound, oh man, I don't know. And maybe it's just because they're both kind of tall and lanky. But O'Neill Cruz is the first guy that comes to mind. And I think it's just because the potential is through the roof with both of them. I think that's the main reason why I'm kind of tying those two. I understand O'Neill Cruz is a much higher, higher regarded at his craft than Pickens is at his. But if Pickens doesn't get hurt and have the knee injury, he's a first round pick. I don't think that's a debate. Like, for anybody who follows football, I don't think that's a debate. I think he's a first round pick if it's not for the knee injury. And he is, I mean, now granted, everything we've seen of him so far has been in practice. I mean, we're talking about practice, and we have yet to see what actually plays out even in a preseason game, much less a regular season game. But you just see the raw tools and the raw talent there, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this guy looks like he could be a freak. And O'Neill Cruz, I think it's the same thing. You see him hit a ball 6 inches off the plate outside, slap at it, and hit it 408 feet, and it goes over the wall in center field. I think that's where you just go, okay, this dude's just a freak. Like, the raw talent is just off the charts. And so I think that's probably the best comparison I can make as of, at least the first one off the top of my head.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is that fair, or am I reaching?
No, it's more fair than using the time machine to go back in time and stop a waiver wire trade. It is a better answer than that.
I'm glad that I at least topped
you
that.
You are trending in the right direction.
I am trending in the right direction. Maybe I'll make the next top prospect ranking.
There we go.
Or at least move up in it.
To see if Chris will continue to trend in the right direction, be sure to subscribe so you get next week's episode and all the fine shows that we have here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. For Chris Halleck, I'm Alex Stone. We'll talk again next week.